Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. It has been my singular delight to get to know over the years and to have an opportunity to, tap into the intelligence of our guest for this full hour-long program of Secure Freedom Radio, a man I've come to believe is among the most thoughtful, incisive, and certainly entertaining of observers of and participants in the war for the free world. He is Mark Helprin. He is better known to most of us as an extraordinarily accomplished author of both fiction and nonfiction works, the most recent of which, a highly acclaimed novel, is Paris in the Present Tense. He is also, however, an essayist of considerable accomplishment, notably on the pages of the Wall Street Journal, but most other places that matter as well. He has been very gracious to visit with us from time to time, and the timing couldn't be more fortuitous, as far as I'm concerned, because we've caught up with him in the aftermath of President Trump's speech to the nation unveiling his new national security strategy in Washington, D.C. And it's, as I say, a great privilege to have Mark anytime, but particularly to have a chance to visit with him in real time about the president's remarks and his plans for our national security is both an honor and simply providential. Mark Helprin, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, let's start with sort of your general assessment of what the president said and the apparent underpinnings of what he said in this new national security plan.
Well, I actually was very happy with the speech. I think it has the marks, I think, of Stephen Miller, who wrote his other really good speech that he delivered in Europe about American values and defense. I think it was fundamentally excellent. Some of the weak points in that it was short on specifics and there were some mistaken assumptions. But the really good part of it was, first, it was good to recognize the relation of GDP and GDP growth to military capacity. This is what the Chinese have recognized in the past 20 or 30 years and what has brought them to the point of being a near peer of the United States. This is what kept Israel alive, has kept Israel alive, and it's what also brought the Meiji into competition with the European powers and then the United States. The recognition that GDP growth and per capita GDP is the basic source of military power. I was also happy that the president announced that he was getting rid of the sequester, if he can indeed do that, because he's not Congress, and there are Democrats in Congress. And also generally increasing defense expenditure, although he tends to speak in terms of absolute figures rather than inflation-adjusted figures. So when he says that the tax cut is the biggest in American history, that's in absolute dollars. If you adjust it for inflation or even look at it just in terms of percentages, it certainly isn't. The Reagan tax cuts were. But it's also excellent of him to recognize that defense buildup is good for the economy. And there are many, many ways to prove that. We probably don't have time to go into that, but there is no question that the idea that the military must wait for the economy is incorrect, because the military is spending is actually a great stimulus for the economy. It can even be a method of organization that tremendously helps the economy. If you look at the Great Depression and World War II, specifically, you find absolutely unimpeachable evidence of that. And the weak points, I think, were, oh, and of course, the call for multi-layered BMD was excellent because missile defense, because we have restrained ourselves to a mid-course interception, and what we have to have is boost phase and also end the terminal interception, because that's the only way that you can conceivably begin to protect is with layers, because one or more of those layers is going to miss. So if you have one after another, you have a better chance of actually protecting against at the very least, rogue regimes like North Korea or Iran.
Yeah. I want to drill down on some of these points with you, Mark, in greater detail here in a minute. But you wanted to say a few words about some of the speech's shortcomings. So let's hit those two, and then we'll get into the details.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the president is a man who is not particularly interested or knowledgeable in or knowledgeable about details. And he made the mistake that he has made before by talking about NATO reimbursing the United States in terms of defense expenditures, when this has never been the case. So what NATO does is try to hit a target of 3% of GNP, and when it doesn't do that,
or 2%, as the case may be.
Yeah, well, when it doesn't do that, that's right. I'm sorry, it's 2%.
We used to do three when we were remotely serious about the war we're in, but now it's, I think, at best 2.
That's right. And under Obama, the last year of Obama, it actually slipped to a smidgen below 3 for the United States, not counting overseas contingency spending. But anyway, NATO doesn't reimburse us. However, when it fails, as it does, as it has, to spend adequately on defense, we have to fill the gap. But on the other hand, we haven't, given what we have in Europe or the lack of it. So the whole thing is somewhat confused in his mind. But it is good that the United States has been pressuring them, and it has worked to some extent to spend more on their defense, because they need it, frankly. And then the other weak point was they talked about another weak point. We talked about sanctions on the North Korea. That they're more or less irrelevant. The sanctions are not going to drive North Korea to abandon its nuclear capacity unless they come vigorously from China, which has 90% of its trade. And they're not going to work. And we have not made much progress in defanging North Korea. There are many ways that we could do that. I could talk about them, but that's irrelevant to the speech. Finally, Frank, he hasn't gotten into detail. The document is 65 pages long, and I haven't read it. I haven't had a chance to read it. But there's very little in terms of specifics. Not mentioned in the speech is the one key thing which anchors everything, and that is the absolute decline in America's nuclear deterrent. And I don't mean floppy disks and software or whatever, but I'm talking about the structure of it vis-a-vis Russia's and China's structure. We are in the weakest position that we have been in ever in terms of nuclear deterrence, and that's something I would very much like to talk about.
Yeah, well, let's do that right away, because this is of surpassing importance. Mark, in a program we did last week on this show, one of our guests assessed that the Russians appear now to be on a trajectory to have 8,000 nuclear weapons, I believe, by the middle of the next decade. And I mentioned this in a meeting of my staff today, and somebody pointed out that not only would that be multiple times the size of the U.S. arsenal, all other things being equal, but every single one of those nuclear weapons and the missiles or aircraft that they're on will be modernized. Some of the aircraft may be a little bit older, but certainly the missiles, certainly the warheads and bombs themselves are modern, we expect, thanks to the kind of aggressive buildup that the Russians have engaged in. And none of ours is modern at all.
In sum, here's the thing. First, If you don't have nuclear deterrence, you're setting yourself up either for a first strike against you, which might succeed, or B, having to surrender on every front all over the world.
I need to ask you to hold that thought, Mark, because that is indeed the crux of the matter. We'll be right back with much more with Mark Halperin, author, commentator, great American, right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.